I think as I look at the future of business, you can go function by function, and we're going to get the black boxification of every corporate function. Finance is going to be an AI black box with a handful of people that manage the black box.
Welcome to Modern Business Operations, where we talk with leaders about how ops is adapting to our modern world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Modern Business Operations. Today, I have the pleasure to talk again with Dr. Eloise Epstein. Hey, thank you for joining me today.
Thank you for having me. I am thrilled to be back.
So just for listeners that don't know, Dr. Eloise is a partner at Kearney, keynote speaker. You work in university, in a steering committees, author of books, co-host of podcasts, and really everyone that is in the procurement space, your influence and thought leadership. So thank you for joining again. And, you know, if you're interested, go listen to our podcast episode from more than 2 years ago now. I looked it up. It was July 23. And oh my God, a lot have happened since. So again, thank you for joining. And I guess the obvious place to start is, how do you summarize what have changed in the last 2 years?
I have to admit, and I haven't gone back but to what we talked about, but certainly I was not on the AI train back in 2023. I remember you all were the first ones that I had seen had put GPT into your solution, and I was very impressed with that. But I, honestly, at the time, I was still like, AI is going to be blockchain 2.0. And wow, was I wrong. And I have come full circle. I've drunk the Kool-Aid. I'm all in. And while I may seem like I'm jumping on the bandwagon, I've also started to witness the just absolute transformation. And we're both in the Bay Area. And I'll just tell you, without meandering too far off the question, what really unlocked it was taking my first Waymo. And I figured if you could have an autonomous robo-taxi running around San Francisco, to me, that was when AI became real. Mm-hmm. And then the next generations of the models came out, and that was it. I'm all in.
Yeah, well, I think we kind of like we're talking about it and how impressive it feels. And maybe let's double click on that, because I think you're representing a big group of people that might feel that way. And maybe there's some people that are still on the fence of like, is this real or is this still hyped? Because again, if you mentioned San Francisco, there is definitely a hype too. You know, it's like,
You go down,
I don't know, people that are not from this area, you know, if you guys come visit and you kind of like drive the 101, it's pretty ridiculous. All the billboards,
oh my
like
God,
AI for this, AI for that. Everything is AI.
Can I just say before you ask the question, yeah, like I take my wife to the airport and like half the billboards, she's like, what's that mean? Like prompt to promotion or something. And I'm like, I don't know. I'm kind of guessing at this. Yeah. Oh my God. The billboards on 101 are just absurd.
It's absurd. It's like AI platform, the AI platform, the AI enterprise platform, enterprise AI platform. It's like it all says the same thing too. But anyway, so like with that, you know, with that side of it, which is definitely hype, to say the least, maybe overhype. But I think a lot of people kind of went through that progression you described, where became a believer at least of saying, okay, there might be hype, but there's also a lot of real here. And so if we double click into more into the world of enterprise, even specifically procurement, transformation of enterprises, where are we in that scale? Because driving a Waymo is a really crazy experience. Now, how far are we from, you know, virtual Waymos actually taking care of business?
Well, just because, I actually just saw something recently that we all can now, is like in the near future, we're going to be able to buy our own robo-taxis at home. So I'm really geeked for that. Here's why I think AI is not just another blockchain or RFID or all IoT, all this other nonsense. And it's very simple. And I know you asked about the enterprise. Everybody that has kids or has a vested interest in family members that are in the any educational system right now is confronting AI. It is, I teach at, I'm an adjunct at a university. I mean, it's just, and my wife teaches at is a professor at a university, and you could just see, like, the entire educational system, how we learn is absolutely getting turned on its head. And I think over the next 5 years, it will be a legitimate crisis. Forget what happens at work for a moment. Everything from K-12, universities, unless it's a hands-on program, I think it's unavoidable. And so I think that's going to have, because, and I tell this joke a lot, or not joke, it's not even a joke, it's a real story. When I was in grammar school, we could not use calculators in math because it was quote unquote cheating. But in almost 2026 here, that seems so silly or stupid, depending on your perspective. So you're going to tell a kid that the entire life, you know, fifth grader or 10th grader or a freshman in college, their entire life is going to be using AI in some shape or form that even like none of us that are older even know. So we're going to tell them you can't use AI because it's cheating. We have to reconcile that. So, and I know I'm skeptical about enterprise adoption, and rightly so, but fundamentally it is going to reshape the educational system. So it's unavoidable in society. And then the only other thing I'll add is AI is being used as an excuse to fire a lot of people in Silicon Valley. And now AI is sort of the catalyst, but you can recalibrate the workforce, and what happens in Silicon Valley will eventually make its way into the corporate world. So it's unavoidable.
I mean, you don't need much. I agree. You just need to touch it in many ways to see some of those things. I feel what's interesting to me is there's been a little bit of, if we kind of go one step below for a second, there's been a lot of back and forth in the last 2 years of what is a GPT wrapper, thin wrapper, actual moat, no moat. Wait, is GPT even a moat? You know, there's a lot of talks like that. At the same time, the market, at least, from if you look at some of the growth, you know, of a lot of companies in the space, it's spending a lot of money on things that in theory are available already in ChatGPT for a fraction of the cost. And to me, that comes back to something that was true in any other variation of big technology leap, which is the use case is many times the, you know, an incredibly important piece of leveraging technology, as well as the fact that most people are not educated enough, sophisticated enough, have the mind share or care enough to come up with leverage points for themselves with the technology. They kind of needed to be packaged for them. How much do you think that's the adoption gap versus you think there might be something deeper that will kind of like transform?
Okay, so I think I have a view that's different than most people. I don't care about use cases. That is an old way of thinking. I believe that 100%. And a lot of my work is focused on the over 40 crowd, because my generation, I'm not going to make any assumption about your age, so let's speak about my generation. We can't sit back and wait for it to be packaged and delivered to us. And so I spend a lot of time. There's no reason anybody in the business world today can't use AI for personal productivity. You don't have to connect to your ERP system. You don't even have to connect to your email. You can use it for personal productivity. I use this example of, I take a lot of screenshots. Well, so, and then it just stamps when I take the screenshot, it stamps the date and time and tells me nothing. So do you know how much time I waste going through opening like 100 screenshots trying to find the one that I think I took that like in June? So I go like, whereas I can have an action or an agent that goes through all of my images and retitles that titles the file name as what's in the content. That's a huge time saver. How many of those things, and I don't even need it tied to any of my, you know,
yeah,
my work email. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So we start doing that, making it tangible. I just increased my personal productivity by X percent. And then you go further down the line and you use something like Notebook LM from Google, or where now it's creating crazy, or Nano Banana, crazy infographics. We'll create PowerPoints for you or slides. So my goal is to reorient all of my work now is on culture and people, because especially those of us over 40, we have to get them going. Because the folks under 40, it's not something they have to learn. It's an experience they've lived with since they were young.
Yeah. And I think when you talked earlier about the next round of people that will join the workforce, you know, and it's like, it's one of those things when you think about internet and then Google search, you know, then mobile, it wasn't like generations, like even the word generation is too big, right? It's a matter of like, where were you when it came out? Literally, were you in the 5 years of like elementary school, or the 5 years of like middle school, or were you in college? Like, or were you the first job? Like every 5 years, if you were earlier and earlier and earlier, it's more and more native to you. And the same applies to the ChatGPT area for the sake of being the first, they kind of get to claim the era. But what does that actually look like? Even for people that just 2 years ago when we had our podcast, they were, you know, maybe starting college or maybe starting high school and are going to be working in companies in the next year or two or three. They're gonna come completely different to it. And, you know, to give you kind of the side of, you know, leading a company, for us internally, I've had to have those conversations with the company and saying, you either learn how to go first to everything, yeah, first to AI, or I'm not sure you're gonna have a role here for much, yeah, longer. It just doesn't make sense for you to even ask those questions. Did you ask GPT? You know, like especially, even internal stuff. You know, our documentation of our own product has been around. So GPT itself is already trained on it. You can go and ask, like, how do you do accent talking? And it knows GPT without any sources, it knows to answer. So for a new employee to come and ask someone internally of it before they ask GPT, it's just ridiculous. So there's so much of it. And it's amazing. The fear from it was, if going back for a second to like, kind of analyzing and predicting, right? The fear of it in the last 2 years was also a lot about how is this going to replace jobs? How is this going to replace jobs, right? Now, I'm going to just jump to a conclusion that, you know, you probably agree that it's not going to eliminate all jobs. It's going to change them and so on. I'm curious to hear, but also I'm curious to your thought of the timeline of when people not only, like you said, going to use it as an excuse to reshape, but actually would start questioning, do we even need this role anymore?
So I'm not a big fan of, okay, AI comes and everybody gets fired. I think that's too simplistic, because I do think new jobs will come. However, I do think there's going to be a big lag, because we see it in Silicon Valley. Huge numbers have been exited and more will undoubtedly come in 26 and 27. And then it will be a big dip in the labor market, but then the new thing will come along and I don't know what that'll be. So there will be jobs, but I think that gap, that lag between the two, it's typically not so dire or so disconnected where we're going to get exits and then a gap and then rehires. Because I've seen this, look at the turn of the century with the dot-com bust. You know, everybody said, well, technology and the internet's dead. And then within 2 years, you had Google, YouTube, Facebook. And then all of a sudden, it was rehiring. And then all of the network and IT infrastructure jobs came back, but changed. So I think that's going to happen, but I think that lag is going to be longer. But I do think that what comes next is going to be different. And it actually might be more analog. It might be more the intersection of AI and physical technology like robotics. I think it's hard to separate the two. So it's going to be bumpy, I think, is my main takeaway. But that's why I'm trying to get everybody oriented to this change.
This episode is brought to you by Tonkin. Tonkin is the operating system for business operations, providing businesses with the building blocks to orchestrate any process with no code or change management required. Contact us at tonkin.com to learn how you can build complex processes fast. When we look at the area where you specialized a lot, at least, you know, kind of where I got to know you, around procurement and supply chain and maybe financing more generally, how do you see the next year? Maybe another version of it for a second. I think there's a lot of interest and a lot of excitement and a lot of people spending money on all areas of the business today on AI, but nothing comes close to what you see with R&D, right? And anything around R&D and AI is just like orders of magnitude more than everything else, which for me, this is just textbook. It happens with every, you know, with every new thing. There's always, they're always obviously, because they're the technical side of it, they're always the first to kind of like get to the bottom of how can I use it the most and where I can, you know, get the most impact. So I do think that this is going to be look different in the next year or two, I think even in the next 6 to 9 months. But what are you seeing?
So I'm always wrong on the timing because I always think it'll go faster than it does. I don't know that we'll see significant changes in 6 months or 9 months or 12 months. We might. But those changes are coming. And I don't think it's just procurement. I think you were alluding to it. I think as I look at the future of business, you can go function by function. What's happening, I absolutely am convinced I'm right about this, is that we're going to get the black boxification of every corporate function. Finance is going to be an AI black box with a handful of people that manage the black box. HR, same thing, you know, on down the line. And so certainly for corporate functions and for procurement, source to pay, most of your hot model or operating model paths that we do today are going to get agentified and then black boxed. That's what we already see, tons and tons of agents in source to pay. At a certain point, you have so many agents, it's really just a black box and a handful of people. If I'm in legal, finance, IT, or HR, when that black box comes, most of the people have to go find something else. In procurement, I'm more bullish on this procurement supply chain. When that happens, I'm like, yes, please, and thank you. I don't want to do any source to pay work. That stuff is horrible. What I want to do is the business of procurement, and I want to sit with the R&D team, sit with the product developers and marketers and engineers, and bring procurement practices into the business. And that is going to be a huge, like I said earlier, I focus on people. That's a huge capability because when I go to sit down with those engineers and whatnot, I'm not bringing a spend report. I'm not bringing a category playbook, right? I am part of the business and I'm thinking about the P&L of the business that I'm in. And I'm going to use AI to help me be a productive member of that team.
Maybe we connect this to like the next level up, right? So we talked about the people side of it. If we think about the technology side of it, you had the famous spider map that you retired.
It retired, yeah.
Yeah, curious of why, by the way, but
yes,
so definitely, but then maybe it's related, but in many ways, there's also this question of if it's a black box, or even if it's on its way for to be a black box, some categories within technology categories, software categories within those departments that have been reigning for a while, do they even have a place in in this world eventually immediately, right?
But we can make that argument about finance or HR or IT as well. Like, what is HR's job? It's to sort of collect and manage data that sits in Workday. But take all the, like, and Workday is just the gigantic, fancy HR information systems database. Well, it's not telling me anything about my workforce, and it's certainly not telling me anything about my agentic workforce. So it's built for the wrong time and place. I was picking on them. Normally I pick on SAP, but we'll pick on Workday today. And so if I'm going to build logic in terms of how to build and optimize workforce, I'm going to do that in an agentic layer. And if I have that agentic layer and all of that, or in an AI layer, I should say, with agents and everything else, that's pretty much a black box. I don't need to know how the AI does its work. I just need to tell it what I want it to do. And that's the difference. And so in your example, like, a lot of these jobs won't exist. I don't need to go down finance. Like, look at almost every position finance. AI does that better than humans.
You know, part of this is also the responsibility aspect of it. So if we do take the canary in the coal mine, if you will, with R&D, right? It's very clear that the job of a developer or a software engineer is already completely different. This is not a futuristic thing. It's like, most, you know, I think, I don't know, Microsoft said it, Google had their own thing. Everyone are talking about it. There's multiple now at this point. We're like 75, 80% of every new code in the world, line of code in the world, is already written by AI. And it makes a ton of sense. And, you know, I'm coming from that background of product and engineering. And we have had this saying for like, I don't know, 30 years, where it's like, there's a developer and there's an engineer, or there's a coder and there's an engineer. They're not, it's not the same. Like, an engineer can code, but engineering is including the architecture, the converting the business needs or the use case or the user story, whatever you want to call it, into how do I build it in a way that scale and stuff. And the world is definitely moved there, where you don't write the code, you review the code, right? In many ways. Now, again, using that as an example, I think what's interesting to me is that I have an attorney's counsel. I don't need them to review the NDA. I can do a heavy AI do it. I don't need them to review other type of contracts as well. But for some of them, I do send it to them, even though I already ran it through ChatGPT for that matter, because I need them to be responsible for it. I need them to say, maybe they run it with ChatGPT too. I don't care at this point. All I care is that they say, yeah, that looks good to sign. Now, what happens there is the transaction became less about the work and more about the responsibility. And the same happens with the coding, right? It's like, who committed it? Who approved that code to get into production becomes the question. Less about who wrote it, because everyone knows they're not writing it anymore, right? How do you think about that? Because to me, that's we don't speak enough about the fact that we're just working people to people. Like, this entire thing is all fake. You know, like, all this world that we live in does not exist if other people don't exist in it. So that black box at one point becomes irrelevant if there isn't a person from the other side that cares about the output.
Well, yeah. And I'll make two comments. One is, two vastly different responses. So we are humans living in a physical world. So at the end of the day, business is between relationships. Now, the question is if you are a critical supplier, if Tonkin's like the thing that I've built my business around, that's an important relationship. Like, our relationship is important. But if I'm going to buy Microsoft Office, that's not I don't care about, like, it's just like, give me the price, execute it, and the black box goes and does that. And that's when I talk about the black box, that allows, or I need pencil or office supplies. Like, nobody is sourcing office supplies anymore, as we buy so few of them. I just want the black box to do it. We need banker boxes and Sharpies and whatever. And I don't know, just send them to the office. Like, that's it. Like, that's, and so the black box should be able to take care of that. But if you and I are talking about the health of my business, then yes. And by the way, I thought you were going to go with, because it's all artificial construct and money is an artificial construct.
Or it's part of it, yeah.
Right, yeah, exactly. But I know that's wrong. But the other, going back to the coding, think about your coder and your engineer and everybody else, the QA and all that. I now, because I'm none of those things, I can build my own AI apps just by prompting it. And I do this in my masterclasses. If I can do it, it's like, oh my God, it opens up so much for me, because in me, I know the AI is rudimentary in how it codes and builds these apps. But what happens in 6 months or a year when I can build anything I want? It's just my imagination. And that, I think, of a fundamental change in all of this.
This is kind of my point, is like, what happened when you stretch it for a second? And it's more than just saying, like, your point about Workday or SAP or a lot of the massive companies that came by just wrapping around a database, right? Now, that is a big question. But also, if you can build your own anything, let's take a CRM as an example. Oh, I want to build a CRM. You do it very quickly. Now, here's the thing, though. That was true before, too. Because you can just run your CRM on a spreadsheet. You can use other tools, you know, spreadsheet-like, spreadsheet plus, I call them, you know, that allows you to do some of those things. Still, most people pay a lot of money for Salesforce. So there's something in the culture, there's something in human behavior. I think part of it is the trust or the blame, on the other way of it, that is interesting. Because even if you buy yourself an AI app that is used just by you, that's one thing. But if you need to build it and now other people need to use it, there's a little bit of a dance there of what happens when there's a need a change or there's a need a problem. Yeah, of course you can go and prompt the AI to make the change. But who's going to test the change and then communicate the change and then make sure that people are not confused about the change and so on and so forth. Now, this might be looking at the world with the old glasses, to your point.
That's exactly what right. That's going to be my response.
Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, let's talk about that.
I think that's all true, but also at the end of the day, actually I built my own CRM vibe coding because I have a spreadsheet plus for my CRM and I use Airtable. But it doesn't capture, the spreadsheet does not capture what I need, because I will note that we recorded this podcast. So every event I do, I have who is the sponsor, or, you know, not sponsor, but I mean, who did I do this for? And so I have Tonkin, and who was the other person? And it's a podcast, not a masterclass, not a keynote, not a whatever. Why wouldn't I want to collect? Actually, why wouldn't I want to point my CRM record for this podcast to the actual podcast and pull out the common themes? And that's where the power of I need a CRM that is not constrained by a spreadsheet, because I can't do that in the spreadsheet construct. So this is about making it useful to me, an audience of one. And so to your question, this is not like the old way of thinking is I'm going to build a tool for everybody. Where I'm looking at it is I'm building a tool for me. And it may not seem efficient by today's standards, but I actually think there's power in it, because like Carney rolled up Salesforce. It's a disaster. And I can't use it because it's not geared to me. It's geared towards different profiles. They're never going to get to my needs. And so I'm better off building my own CRM that stores everything essentially in memory. I'm using that term loosely, but not in a structured column or database. So that I think is the big difference in terms of old mindset and new mindset.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I think it's going to be, I think there's a term for the core, like not specifically the way you're doing it. So like what you're describing is really, really is a personal application. There's also the concept of burner apps, which is literally, you know, not even like an application for your kind of personal use for a specific area of your life that you are doing, but literally I need something right now for this, like the next 10 minutes. And I need like, a quick application to do that.
But that's my example of the screenshot. Like I need to go find a screenshot from June or heaven forbid January. And like, if I just took 10 minutes, I could just build that thing. And then I can find the screenshot I need. And then, oh, by the way, now it's just running in the background. But I also want to make a point, because I think in this old mindset versus new mindset, the way I look at it is you can't have a free-for-all, not in the enterprise. So what I like to talk about is there's has to be a governance layer. And governance is a way of operating. Too many legacy corporate thinks of governance as a document that sits in a SharePoint folder that nobody looks at. Whereas I'm talking about, like, there are certain things that we have to tell AI, the AI or the procurement brain, as I call it, you can do this, anybody can do this, but only a couple people can do that. And one thing might be the classifications. We're going to have one taxonomy for classification. Anybody can access it, but only a couple people can update it. But as long as we use this data feed and whatever else, then you can build whatever app you want, whenever you want it. And I think we often lose the thread of governance, because yes, it would be a complete free for all. And by the way, in that governance, let's say you work for me in whatever, and we work for some big enterprise, you built all these apps and agents, and then you leave, I should be able to tell the AI to go in and interrogate what you did, pull all your agents over, pull whatever apps you have, summarize it, store it off, and then if I need it, or ask the AI to reference it if I need to. And that's like, this is that whole new mindset. And I don't even know everything, but I want to direct people to start thinking like that.
Yeah, it's really interesting. It's really interesting to think about what would stay and what would not. I think your kind of last point is probably the biggest point, in my opinion, more than just the governance, even the people leaving, because I think personal productivity, we kind of go back as we kind of come to the to kind of like our time. But as you look back into where we started, everyone, there is no excuse to anyone to not be using AI for their personal productivity. Like, hands down, just unacceptable at this point. And then you take it from there and you realize that when it does get to a point where you are part of a group and a team, and if you want, if for your own thing, do your own thing, when you kind of like need to work inside of that organization, large organization, even if it's a small organization, definitely big organization, this is where I think, to me, there's not a clear definition yet where the compliance lines comes in. When is the thing that you've been doing an amazing job at because you are really good at kind of building an army of agents around you to do great things, but you only thought about yourself to do your job well. And then you move, forget about it. You're never going to get fired. You're doing an amazing job, but you just decide to move. Now this team is holding a bag. They don't know how you've done it. It's a black box, and they're stuck. There's interesting situations going
to
happen.
Oh, I know, but ultimately it's a black box to me too. So like, however I did, let's just take my screenshot example. Like, let's say that was something that other people could make use of. At a certain point, I don't know how the AI is doing it. I just said, I have a folder full of screenshots and I need you to redo the file name. So when I leave, the AI knows that it built that thing for me, because you and I are using the same AI. And so when I leave, you can just say, what apps did Eloise build? And it's going to say it has this screenshot thing. And by the way, when it gets to governance, a sort of like macro level governance, part of it is if I make the request to build, like I say, here's my prompt. I have a folder full of screenshots I want you to retitle. And then you come in the next day and you put the same prompt in. It says, oh, I built one for Eloise. Would you like the same one? And because it's, again, learning and it's keeping all of this in memory. This is the mindset shift that certainly those of us who are 40 are going to struggle with, because like, this is reimagining how systems work. And I think ultimately, to get back to your earlier point, this is going to reshape how businesses work. And I'm actually excited for that, because it is going to be the next 10 years is going to be wild in terms of like mind sort of expanding. So,
yeah, absolutely. Well, that's a perfect spot to end in. And maybe we meet again doing this in 2 years and see what we got right and what we got wrong.
Exactly. Awesome. That sounds great. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for joining me. And if anyone wants to continue nerd with you, I think LinkedIn is where they find you. Is that correct?
Yes, I'm a little slow, but I do respond. Also, you can find me on DrEloise.com, like E-L-O-U-I-S-E.
Awesome. Eloise, thank you so much again, and we'll talk again soon.
Thanks.
Cheers.
I hope you enjoyed this episode of Modern Business Operations. You can see the show notes and all of the resources mentioned on today's episode at tonkin.com/mbopod. Thank you for listening, and be sure to subscribe for updates on future episodes. And if you're interested in staying up to date on the latest in business operations technology, head over to tonkin.com.